I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. Roy Henry Vickers and Lucky Bud join me again. The best-selling duo have a new book out from Harbor Publishing, Orca Chief. It is the third in a series of Northwest Coast legends that Roy and Lucky have collaborated on. The previous books, Raven Brings the Light and Cloudwalker, were bestsellers, as is this one. I checked, and last week it was number one in the province. They've gained quite the following here in British Columbia and beyond. This new book tells the legend of how four hunters from the village of Kitkatla thousands of years ago left home looking for food. They cast their anchor overboard carelessly. The Orca Chief sends for them and teaches them how to sustainably harvest the ocean's resources. It's a story that's thousands of years old, but a necessary one. I'll get the Messrs. Vickers and Bud to tell us about this story and putting it all together. Their collaboration has yielded these three books, as well as last year's Storyteller, a retrospective of Roy's work from 2003 to 2013. That, too, was a bestseller. Robert Lucky Bud is an indomitable historian. You can hear him regularly on CBC's North by Northwest, where he presents the voices of British Columbia series based on the Imbert Orchard recordings that inspired two acclaimed books, 2010's Voices of British Columbia and last fall's Echoes of British Columbia, Voices from the Frontier. He recently contributed the introductory essay to Ted Harrison Collected. His website is at memories2memoirs.ca. Roy Henry Vickers is the distinguished artist, carver, speaker, and author. He's got a list of awards and honors that are far too numerous to mention. His website is at royhenryvickers.com. They're both welcome guests on this program anytime, anywhere, and I'm delighted that they're joining me in person now. Please welcome to the Plant on the Line program, Roy Henry Vickers and Lucky Bud. Mr. Bud, good morning.
What a pleasure. Thank you.
And Mr. Vickers, good morning.
Good morning, Joe. It's finally come to fruition that we get to be with each other and visit.
This is not the first time we've met, though. We met, I guess, 2 years ago when Raven Brings the Light launched in this town. I haven't met Lucky before.
Yeah, we've talked a few times.
We've talked a few times, yeah. Mm-hmm. And your book last year, Echoes...
Echoes of British Columbia.
Echoes of British... I just read it and I forgot it already. Echoes of... That was a great book.
Thank you. It was recently nominated for the Lieutenant Governor of British Columbia's Historical Medal. I'm so excited about that. I'm surprised and awestruck, really.
And those record. I mean, what's great about that book is you buy the book, and then it comes with these CDs, and then you can listen to these voices. I mean, these are stories that you've listened to over the years, right, Roy?
That's right. Yes.
Yeah. And then so for me, as someone who's you know reading the book, and I mean I can put the book down and I can put these CDs in. And listen to these voices and just how they sound.
Yeah, I mean, it really helps create a three-dimensional picture through storytelling of the atmosphere and the sorts of characters that these people are describing. And British Columbia has just as rich of a history as anywhere else in the world, but a lot of people just haven't really discovered our semi-historical characters here yet. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we tend to be lazy about that, aren't we, as British Columbians?
Absolutely. It's something that, well, I'm not one of those lazy people because that's how I got to meet Mr. Lucky Bud, but as a child growing up, the history of BC has always been uppermost in my mind, I guess, as an artist and someone who's interested in the Haida, Tsimshian, Kwagyul, Coast Salish, New Channel people. And I used to listen to these recordings when I was lost in Victoria and yearning for for the North Country. And when I heard the voices... and listen to the stories, it was feeling, not just hearing, but feeling the voices. Like, yeah, first time I'm looking for that name for Skeena, long time. Then this old woman, she told me, it's a juice from the cloud. And to hear that voice, and it's just part of my life now.
Yeah, that's right. And for me, with the headphones on years after at the BC Archives working for the CBC listening to this material, I was moved almost every day upon listening to this stuff. It's such a treasure, and it has been one of the honors of my life to be entrusted with it and to bring it to the public and have people really be aware of this incredible history we have here and these amazing characters.
And so how do you take the voices that you've heard, the stories that you've known since, you know, you were a kid, and put it in a book like Orca Chief?
Oh, it's lots of fun.
Yeah, it's a joy. Yeah. And I think it comes through in all of our books, the amount of joy that comes and inspiration that comes from these projects. We laugh a lot.
Yeah, Lucky actually becomes the person who's recording the stories,
yeah,
just like Imbert Orchard was. And then he goes and transcribes the stories and begins writing them to work in a book format. And then he sends a PDF to me and gets me to go over it. And
a lot of times we actually do it on the phone even.
Yeah.
We'll read it over together.
We just bounce back and forth and back and forth. Then once all of the story is done, he'll say to me, oh, you know the part about when they drop the anchor, do you have an image for that anchor landing on the roof of the house? And I say, well, I already did the image of them putting the anchor over. Yeah, but it's a really good part of the story when the anchor's on the roof of the house. And so he'll draw out of me the image, and then eventually I will see what he's thinking and what I see when he's speaking to me, and then this magic comes. And for me, it's as exciting to see the images because they've been in my mind for this one for 40 years.
Yeah.
And the thing about oral history and about these stories in particular is that for thousands of years they've been used as teaching tools. And that's not lost on us. We know the history of what these stories are and what they ought to be. So when we sit down to put together a book like Workachief, we'll say, there's a section here where we can add something here. Let's look at the stories that we want to throw in here. And we put in a part about humpback whales bubble feeding. Perfect opportunity to teach kids about matrilineal descent. It's the mother of the group that makes sure that in the whale society that the kids are the first ones to be fed. And we find all these ways of bringing in all these other strands of knowledge and all these other strands of stories, because we both collect stories to put in there. And it's a blissful
and the respect
process.
The love and respect for the ocean, and how at a time in history when these stories are perhaps more important than they've ever been since they were told, I don't, who knows how long ago.
4,000 or 5,000 years.
And today they're more pertinent to get the message across to British Columbians about how important it is for us to look after our rivers, to look after our oceans, take care of the land that's been given to us.
And what a tipping point in history, not to interrupt, but what
exactly,
a tipping point
yeah.
in history that 30, 40, 50 years ago, these stories were being so repressed by our government and by our people, and even the people who used to be able to tell these stories were losing them. And now we've come at a point where they're bestsellers. I mean, the knowledge is really getting through, and you've got the people in Port Simpson saying no to pipelines, and their voices are coming through more than ever. These voices, after hundreds of years now of being silenced, are finally finding the light of day, and for us to, for me especially, to play such a humble part in helping that to come across, I mean, it's... I don't even have words.
Yeah, the thing that in reading the book that I got out of it, if you will, was the idea that there's great beauty around us. Obviously, if we take the time to look at it, we'll see it, mm-hmm. we'll appreciate it a lot more. It also teaches us about, as you've said already, Roy, about sustainability. That there is this bounty out there that we can benefit from.
Mm-hmm.
We can't waste it because mm-hmm. it'll be gone if we do.
Yeah.
But we can still use it, and it's all part of that, I guess, a circle, if you will, the cycle.
Mm-hmm.
And as you said, because I totally agree after having read the book, is that it is a necessary time to tell this story.
But there's also some latent messages that after you read it a bit deeper, there are these other things happening. There's this orca chief who is angry, and he is angry with these men for treating his home and his helpers with disrespect. And instead of coming down with violence and punishment, mm-hmm. he mentors compassion, understanding. And so there's this whole way of how one ought to be a leader and teach. And the Orca Chief embodies teaching through compassion, teaching through forgiveness, and then the men are open to the lesson.
That's what I thought, you know, because his house is destroyed. He's going to, you know...
he's going to have these guys for breakfast.
Yes, exactly.
You see the picture of him with his arms outstretched, and he's fierce.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And then he sends for them, and then you expect, you know, all hell to break loose. But but no, he does act in a this idea, as you said, of forgiveness.
He's a leader.
Yeah.
You know, that's how you lead.
And why, Roy, don't we have sort of that sort of leadership in our society today?
Well, we're looking at years of oppression. There are people who describe it as a genocide, and I see it that way. And what happens when you have people who are suppressed, and they live their lives, and they raise their children feeling shame about who they are. And they pass into the next life, and their children grow up with these feelings of mistrust, of anger, of rage. And when you go to find where it's coming from, there is no place. It was mentored to them. And so I have a dear sister, Patricia June Vickers, who is a doctor of psychology and education. And she describes our predicament as having internalized colonization now in the villages of the Northwest Coast. And myself, as a sweat lodge leader and pipe carrier, we are four types of people, and there are four doors and four directions. East is the way of the teacher. We are to learn the lessons that are there for us every single day. Then, once the lessons are learned, we turn to the south, the way of the healer. And the lessons of the teacher are to help us to see where those parts of us have run away. And we, in recovery, we go and we bring those precious parts back to us to make us whole. And then we look to the west, where the sun goes down and darkness comes to the world. We human beings have a gift. It's called vision. So the teacher and the healer help the visionary to have clarity of vision. Without the second door of healing, the vision is not clear. And so we have many people who have not gone through the door of healing. So they can't see where they are and what's happening. And so for us today, these stories are to help people to understand where it is we need to go, because the fourth door is the door of the warrior. The fourth door is the door of the leader. So a leader in our country, like a politician who hasn't gone through healing, will not have the clarity of vision to know where he needs to take people. And we have strife around us everywhere because we need to work those four parts of ourselves: the teacher, the healer, the visionary, and the leader.
How does it start? How do we start in our discourse and our discussions that we have about politics?
Just like this.
Yeah.
When the truth is spoken, the truth in you hears the truth. And it's because the truth is a living, mystical, spiritual thing, there is something inside us that knows when it's coming to us. And so if we take that truth and have it be part of our conscious thought each day, then we begin to work with the truth. And the way the stories go is that we are called to stand in the strength and the truth and the beauty of who we are. And when I first began this journey, one of my teachers said, "Roy, you need to look in the mirror and look at that man and say aloud, 'I love you.'"
Yeah.
I couldn't do it for a long time. Mm-hmm. And it's that love that you learn to accept yourself in all of your faults. When you begin to work with that in your life, love changes everything. And the stories are all about respect and kindness and forgiveness. And where does that come from? It comes from the heart of love. And so it all, and we seem to be uncomfortable talking about that. And for me to say to Lucky, "I love you, man," you know, it's a natural thing for me today. But 30 years ago, you wouldn't even catch me saying it.
So how do you get to that point? What has to happen in one's life that you are able to overcome, say, 30 years of repression, if you will?
I'm working on Roy's biography right now, and that's a very big question. That's the theme of the entire book.
Uh-huh.
It's a big one. We should probably revisit that one.
When we talk about that book, when that comes out.
Yeah. But this whole idea of leadership and who ought to rule, this is so old. Go back to Plato's Republic, you know, 400, 450 BC. It's all about, you know, the blind leading the blind. And what he called a true leader was a philosopher, someone whose head was healed, someone whose heart was healed. That's who should be leading us, not a politician. You know, I mean, and it goes back. Yeah. I mean, who ought to rule? What kind of people? I mean, this is political philosophy back to the beginning of writing, really.
Yeah.
And to me, I see the way I see us getting to that place is, first of all, my mother used to always, when I came to her with the Order of British Columbia or whatever award that I had won, I'd probably go and show my mom. She would say in a kind, gentle voice, "Well, son, that is wonderful. But you know, happiness can only come from inside." And I would I'd walk away from that discouraged because there was no happiness. And so when we realize that there's a happiness that is lacking in our everyday life, then hopefully we are driven to find out, to find that happiness. And as when we ask, when we humble ourselves and we say, "Look, I need help," help will come, because all of our being is open to assistance wherever it's going to come from. Might be from a book, it might be from a person who comes to you and says, "Hey, you know, you ever thought of doing your biography?"
What hope have you got for the young? Because young people tend to, you know, they're preoccupied with a lot of stuff. And so, you know, if you can get them early, I guess, with this message of yours, with these ideas of yours, you probably will change the world quicker. Can you?
Oh, yes, I know. I know we can. We just came from Sir James Douglas School.
In Victoria.
Mm-hmm. What were the grades from kindergarten?
Kindergarten to grade 6.
500 children.
Plus.
Grade 6 being the uppermost grade. For the whole presentation in this big auditorium, they were glued. They were totally open, and they're like, I look at it as like little sponges, and we have the water for them. And when it came time for questions and answers, 500 arms went up in the air, and they're waving like, "Me first, me first." And so I know that when we are willing to put ourselves in a place like in front of children, then what we're doing is not only being storytellers for those children and showing them the books, but we are being mentors. So you don't tell people where to go. You show them, and then you take them by the hand and say, "Come with me."
With love and support and kindness. And the thing about storytelling is that storytelling, it's a way of communicating right to the heart. You know, there are so many facts embedded in the narrative of this story, but their hearts connect with the message. Mm-hmm. They'll get the facts, they're there. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But I mean, and that's what storytelling does, which is why people have been doing it. I mean, I've been saying this all tour, it keeps coming up for me, but one of the main things that makes human beings different than any other species on this planet is we have the ability through language to share knowledge and share knowledge. You know, this is how we build a fire, this is how we cook food, and all of a sudden, all over the world, people are doing this and building upon it and building upon it. It's all done through mentorship and storytelling and song.
And I see it as helping teachers, helping our education system to change the way we teach.
Yeah.
You know, nothing much has changed since the Industrial Revolution. It's still take all this information and then put it all down on a piece of paper and we'll see how smart you are by what you've memorized.
Right.
Well, to me, it's take them out on the land, show them the winds and the waves and explain to them what's happening out there.
Get them to feel.
Yeah, get them to feel it and look at it and realize this is all for us. And then put them in a classroom and say, "Could you write down this, or could you draw a picture of what you saw?"
That's right.
They just come alive.
Yeah, and now that these kids have a story and characters that they can associate with, like the Orca Chief or whatever, in the future, they are going to have a different attachment and a different value system when they go to do things like walking on the beach and thinking they might throw their trash overboard or whatever it might be. There's a meaning there now, and that causes change. That leads to change because it's education.
As a teacher, Roy, what do you learn from speaking to people? I mean, you must get something out of it other than, say, you know, getting to meet interesting people, and these kids, as you said, at Douglas Elementary in Victoria. I mean, you must have walked away from that experience the other day, learning something you didn't know the day before, maybe.
I think it's a humility. If it's so simple, that we want to make it complicated. And what I'm learning with every one of these presentations is, if you stand in the truth and you deliver the message with all of the tenderness and love that you have, kindness that you have in you, the rest will take care of itself. And so that when the response comes, every time it comes to me, there's, I'll look at Lucky and I'll just tap my heart area of my chest like this, because the response to your giving is huge. And so it's just like someone saying, "Oh, you're doing good, Roy. You're doing good. People are listening." And so each time I do this, that's what happens. I'm given the message that, yeah, keep it up. You know,
and you are responsible for the knowledge that you have. And if you can disseminate that and share it with people, like, what higher thing is there that you could really be doing with your time, really?
That was a big one. My mother always used to say, "Well, son, you are responsible for the knowledge that you acquire."
Yeah.
Son, to whom much is given, much is required.
And so, Roy's mission since he started being an artist started when he was 18 or 17 at Oak Bay High School, the first time he ever faced racism. And his art is really all about just like teaching people about the beauty of the cultures and the traditions of the people of the world and of the Northwest Coast, you know. So this is just all part and parcel of that same mission that he's been on now for 41 years.
And I also, it's that there, racism is not a, how can we even have racism when we are all family?
That's right.
When we have the same mother, our earth. When all of our ancestors are part of our Mother Earth, we are family.
Yeah, it's an ignorant word.
And the more I learned about myself and the culture of my father's people, the more I was astounded at all of this, all of these things that happened before Europeans came to this country. And to whom much is given, and we are responsible for the knowledge. And so my life has been putting down in images all of these beautiful things about my father's people and this world that I live in.
And his mother's people, too, to be quite honest. There's a lot of,
that's the other thing.
The symmetry and the meeting of those two cultures is...
I grew up with a mother who was Canadian English. Both her parents emigrated here from England, and she was born in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan. And she married an uneducated, in those days, he would have been called a dumb Indian, and people were flabbergasted. She was called a Siwash lover and all kinds of things. I never knew any of that happened. Mom was mom and dad was dad. I didn't even see her as a white person and him as an Indian. Mm-hmm. They were mom and dad. And her grandparents and her parents and my dad's parents, they were my grandparents. And I saw no difference.
Did you find that in Canada today, I mean, a lot has changed, but, you know, we still hear racism of all sorts. Do you think the way that we've talked to each other, talked to one another, has that improved, do you think?
No. I see racism is not a word that I use. It's discrimination. How can there be racism if we are all one family? How can there be racism if there is one race of human beings that walk the face of this earth and we all walk on two legs? We all have seven basic emotions. The more we talk to each other, the more we realize just how familiar we are. Familiar coming from familial, which is where the word family comes from. And so for me, it is astounding that my son can go into a tribal school on Vancouver Island and suffer discrimination in preschool. And here I am at coming up 70 years of age next year, and when I was in school, I didn't see it in grade 1 or 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 or 7 or 8. I didn't see it. I didn't have any experience of it till I was in grade 11. So we have regressed, not progressed. I don't see progression. I see regression. And it's that also drives me to teach a white guy who wants to learn how to carve totems. I'll teach him. Why? Well, because he loves it and he wants to do it. And to me, art and the expression of art and these stories, yes, they came from the ancestors of my father's people, and they belong to everybody in the world.
Yeah, it's time for everyone to hear these stories and these messages. The time is now. It just is.
Yeah.
So I've sat here mesmerized listening to Roy the last few minutes, but you're around him a lot more.
Yeah.
Than most people, I would assume, were getting to work with him. Would it be presumptuous for me to say that he's changed your life?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I said it to somebody the other day, a lot of the lessons that I learn in being with Roy are things that will be resonating with me 30, 40 years down the road from now in ways that I'm not really cognizant of now. But when we're together, it's not a mentorship. It's just two friends exchanging.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, in order for us to be able to do the work we do together, it all comes from joy and play. It doesn't come from wanting anything. It just comes from an organic process.
Mm-hmm.
He mentioned his sister Patricia. She joked with me one time. She said, "I love spending time with you and Roy together because you have this amazing father-son dynamic. But sometimes it's really hard to find out who the dad is." So I don't go into it with, we're exchanging and we've got a lot of common ground. We share a lot of very similar philosophies, and even though we come from different cultures, there's a lot of overlap, and it's very easy to relate. And the more we talk, the more we find connections of things that brought us to the place where we are now. And it's for anything, I would say it's actually just really humbling. I'm so thankful, and I love what we're doing, and I'm grateful for it, really.
And just imagine the stories that you'll be able to tell people years from now.
Yeah.
Even not years from now, but now.
Yeah.
Stuff that you've learned from Roy.
Well, for sure. And the stuff that we learn when we're together. It feels mm-hmm. like every single time we go out, some sort of little bit of magic happens. I mean, we've been on this book tour since Monday. It's now Saturday in 5 days. And every day it's like there's some small or big fireworks that happen. And it's hilarious and it's fun. And I'm just trying to be as conscious of it and be as present in it as I can. It's such a gift, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. It really is.
And now, Lucky's work, Roy, is remarkable in and of itself. You know, I mean, those two books that I mentioned off the top are terrific pieces of, I mean, just necessary books to have of history. So what's it like working with him in terms of say, getting a book like this together? I mean, is he a tough taskmaster?
Oh, no. No. We're really playing. We're just having fun. It's
shared vision is how I like to think of it.
Yeah, Lucky will put himself in a child's place, but he at the same time has this education as an oral historian,
mm-hmm.
and that's what he graduated from university with. And I've been fortunate to be around people who have never been to university, who have never been to school, and yet they raised families successfully in this world. And yet I grew up with a shame of not going to university. And then I meet Lucky, and we talk, and we exchange information, and I realize, well, I'm still a teacher, and he's a teacher, and I'm a student, and he's a student, and it's time for you, Roy, to let go of these little uncomfortable feelings that have nothing to do with your life. It's something, some way of thinking that somebody put on you and you adopted it. And it's time to change my way of thinking, as Bob Dylan put it.
And we just have a lot of fun working together.
Yeah.
And as I said, it's just really fun, and it's engaging, and it's inspiring, and it's, you know, things that he's read that he can, you know, turn me on to, and things that I've read that I can turn him on to, and
yeah.
shared music love. And
oh, I'll get ticked off.
Yeah.
You know, I'll get upset, and I'll go, damn it, Lucky, just give me some time here. Let me work on this one. No, it all doesn't come that easy. And then, you just work on that, Roy. And then he'll hang up, and I'll go to work, and boom, it just comes that easy.
Yeah.
So it's like I'm continually learning to be patient. And yet I realize that I have what some people would call patience, because I can spend hours and hours and hours working on a piece of sculpture or a painting, and people think that takes patience, but it doesn't, because you are loving this work that you're doing. And
well, he's learned that it's about the process, not the final result. Mm-hmm. And I've learned patience like nothing else by working with Roy. I mean, I am proactive to a fault. When I have an idea, it's all I can think about it, which is why I get so much done. Mm-hmm. And then Roy occasionally will have to say to me, stop, you got to just wait a second. And it is so good for me to have somebody in my life who can understand my excitement, understand my vision, and yet gently be like, wait a second. And that is among the biggest blessings that I get out of my relationship with Roy, for sure. My wife tells me the same thing.
Yeah, and I think what we learn from each other is this ability to always be open to the other, because we know there's a love and a caring and a common goal between us. And so even though anger may come up in you, anger is a wonderful emotion, and you can share anger with respect and love.
Yeah, and to be clear, it's only come up once or twice. It's not like we're just throwing us.
Yeah, but we were talking like it never happens, eh?
No, it happens.
It does.
Yeah. But I guess that's the artistic process, isn't it? And that's just two people connecting on any level at all.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. It's a collaboration. There's no doubt about it.
And there's so much magic and inspiration that happens, and images that just come out of the great mystery of life and other people's lives.
So, or even more so, the images that come from his past of like, oh my God, this thing happened to me 30 years ago. And I just had this vision of this thing, and then walking through him as he goes through. I mean, I am privy to a master artist's process, and it's nothing that he can control. It just comes. And so more stories keep coming out, which is, you know, brilliant for me, because I'm the story guy. Like, I work in the medium of storytelling. So I'm getting access to all these layers of story and meaning, and vice versa. We talk about it all the time.
This is not only a necessary story, but it's a nice book to have in one's hand to read, because it's visually just stunning. Mm. It's beautiful work, and the design turned out quite well.
Yeah.
You say in the front of the book that this is a story that you heard. Was it your uncle tell you?
My grandfather.
Your grandfather, pardon me. And so it's a story that you've obviously told over the years.
Mm-hmm. And he only ever heard it once. It's really, really important to point out.
Really?
He was told this by a man in his village. They called everyone in their village Ya'a, which was grandfather. It wasn't his blood grandfather. And this story was told to him once. And he was also told, if I can speak for you for a second, you're not allowed to tell this story now. You will know when the time comes that you will be able to hear it. And his sister was at our storytelling today, two of them, and they heard this story for the first time.
So this was the right time to tell the story?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. There's another thing. When you look at the three books that we've come out, and so we have this idea, or Lucky had this idea, we got to do Raven Brings the Light, so that's got to be the first one, because books are about truth and light, and so Raven Brings the Light. And then I think the next one should be the how the Skeenas, Nass, and Stikine rivers got put together, and the rivers go to the ocean, so the third one should be about the ocean, and then the next one after that should be about the flood, and that kind of just one leads into the next. And so we make up our minds, okay, this is the way it's going to be. And then here we are releasing Cloudwalker last year about the origin of the Nass and the Stikine and the Skeena rivers. And it's right at a time of controversy over LNG pipelines coming across. And this year, people battling to save the estuaries of the Nass and the Skeena rivers and the ocean, and how we can so easily damage the ocean, and here's Orca Chief, and it's like
it's bigger
there's,
than
there's
us.
Like a bigger there's something more happening that it moves us, and all we have to do is be open to that and do what inspires us.
I'm sure you see orcas all the time. What do you see when you see an orca? I mean, is it the same thing that your ancestors saw?
Well, I'm not sure, but I see a relative. I'm not afraid of them. I've had them come right up beside my rowboat when I was rowing, so close they could knock the oar out of the oarlock, and I wasn't afraid. I've had people tell me stories of when they were fishing, and all of these orcas came up around my Uncle Johnny's boat, and the men were afraid, and some of them went down below, and they hid down below. But a couple of the men who were from the killer whale tribe said, no, something's wrong. And it turned out that one of the orcas was caught in the net. And so they freed the orca and they all left.
Yeah.
So it's a... there's so much magic. There's so many things that happened. Little stories like this guy was picking seagull eggs this time of the year in May, not far from Kitkatla. And I've seen these orcas swim right along the beach, and I've seen them turn and look up at me when I'm standing at the edge of the rock watching them swim by. Actually look at me, and it's like, oh, look at the power of that. Nass, we call them Nass, and there's like a kinship or a connection because there just was. It looked at me and I looked at it and we saw each other.
On my 25th birthday, I was in active pass with my brother's boat with him, and we were in the middle of a congregation, and for about 3 hours we had like at least 60 orca go by, and it was one of the highest days of my life. And when the idea to do this book series came, this was the book that off the bat I was the most excited about.
Yeah.
The opportunity to see the underwater world. I mean, I love all these books and I love all the imagery, but it's a, you know, if you've never been scuba diving, if you've never been under there, it's like there is a power to under the ocean. I mean, it is, and the imagery is really, I mean, fantastic. And then we have these things and we see them finally on a computer into PDF, and then to hold the artifact in our hand for the first time, it breathes. I am so, my expectations for this book were so high, and it has exceeded all of them. I remember holding it in my hand for the first time, and Roy was driving. He was on a Bluetooth or something, and I was telling him about it. Oh my God, I'm holding it in my hands and the colors. And finally, after about 2 minutes, he says, "So are you excited, Lefty?"
And I dove for 150 dives out of Tofino, and I used to dive for a guy who came and collected specimens for the Vancouver Public Aquarium. And I've been under the ocean and been near, I fed halibut on the bottom of the ocean floor, and have been so close to them. So as those things were happening, the story that was told to me so long ago would come alive in me, and I would see things that I wouldn't normally see because I've seen them in my mind, in my vision, when the story is told. And every time I tell the story, different images go through my mind, and it's incredible. It's magic.
My favorite scuba diving things are always with turtles, which aren't in this book.
Well, you'll write a book about turtles one day. Yeah. Do you think the old man that told you the story of the orca chief would be pleased with this book?
He knew.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. He knew. He knew that the reason he told me the story, and this is mentorship. People, the old people, they, when they're watching other people, you can see those who listen with all of their being. They listen with their eyes, with their nose, with their ears,
their heart.
And so when I came across his path, he couldn't see. He was blind. But he knew that it was time to share this story with Roy.
And we were standing at the auditorium the other day in front of all these 500 kids. I turned to Roy and I said, "What do you think Kenneth Spencer would say if he knew that telling you this story in his bedroom in 1974 would lead to this in 2015? Yeah. And Roy just turned to me. He said, "Oh, he knew.
He knew, yeah. He would be singing or lifting his hands up and just... Happy.
You spoke of the beauty, the majesty, the grace of orcas a short time ago. The environment is something that we are talking a lot about in politics and the sort. What worries you about this coast, about this ocean at this time?
Well, nothing worries me. I'm a person of prayer. And when I let my children go to school, I'm helpless. And I have two choices. I can worry myself sick and not get a doggone thing done all day and just go and walk around the school trying to make sure they're okay. Or I can say a prayer and leave it to the Creator of all, to and my ancestors to look after my children, and I can go about doing what I've got to do. And so today, really nothing worries me. What happens is I am moved to speak. And that's, we must be mentors to those around us. So here, speaking with you, Joe, this is the reason that I would want to come and do this, is so that the other people who couldn't be today at the storytelling, they can hear these words. And it's our stories that make the difference. And so I believe that love will always transpire or transform, transcend the darkness, because it's light and truth is light. And so we live in a time when we have this false economy, these false values of life. And I can't remember who the person was that wrote the song, but it was, when it comes my time, I will leave this old world with a satisfied mind. Well, how can you leave this world with a satisfied mind? You can leave this world satisfied knowing that you have done everything in your power to make the world around you a better place, to spread more love, to spread more inspiration. And that's the way I am today. In the midst of all of this turmoil, there is something inside me that says, you just keep talking. Yeah. You just keep putting it out there, and you'll make a difference.
Yeah, and this is a very hopeful time. Since we've left on Monday for this trip, the NDP have won in Alberta. The people of Port Simpson have twice unanimously, without one person saying yes, said no to a $1 billion offer to use their land by Petronas. Mm. This is a hopeful time. I mean, the message is getting out there. These people whose voices have been repressed for so many years, about 150 years, are finally getting a chance to speak, and they're making the most of their voices. Let me tell you, it's being heard. Roy read something really brilliant the other day about how the one thing that sends the politicians quaking in their boots, really quaking in their boots, is the voice of the First Nations of this coast. They're the ones who have the power to stop their plans.
And I could worry that internalized colonization and Indian politics is just going to make a schmozzle out of this whole thing. Or I can say, I am going to Facebook, I am going to tweet, I am going to talk to anybody who will want to listen to me. And when I speak, my speech will be about love and hope and the desire to make this place a better place for all.
Yeah, and the more we speak, the more people join in unison. I mean, and that's our experience every single day.
Every
when I say
day.
There's joy, people come out of nowhere to just, you know.
6 days and hundreds of people, and the response has always been overwhelmingly positive.
Thank you for helping
hopeful.
Give voice to these things that we feel, and we're with you.
It must be gratifying, isn't the word, I guess, but it must make you quite pleased at the end of the day that these books have been as successful as they have. But beyond that, because I mean, you know, people buy books all the time that they don't read, but but these books in particular, these three, and then Storyteller last year, have done so well, and have touched a lot of people.
It's really funny as people say that to me all the time. It's nice for us to do a tour like this, and really feel that. But tonight I'm going to be trying to put my little kids to bed, and tomorrow morning I'm going to wake up and my little boy, who God bless him, I couldn't love him more, is going to give me a really hard time about eating his breakfast. And you know, we're living our lives, but you know, it's nothing, you know, you don't, it's the best I can say.
Yeah, and I call home every morning and every evening, and my dear wife Andrea, who's a school teacher, she wants to know, okay, who did you meet? And what did you say today? And what was the highlight of the day? And so I get to go through this at the end of each day. And at the end of each day, I'm left with joy.
So life's good, isn't it?
Life's good.
It's good. Yeah. We've got beautiful families. We've got wonderful people in our lives. We both have two incredible wives who make it all necessary. I couldn't be here right now if it wasn't for this woman who is the greatest mom in the world, taking care of our kids and encouraging me to go out and do your thing and then get home and help with bedtime. Impossible without her.
Yeah. And my mom used to say, happiness has to come from inside. And now I know how that happiness can come from inside every day. So I'm glad that we're here, Joe. And
this is a blast, really.
This has been, for me, such an honor, a privilege, pleasure, whatever adjective you want to use. You're the writer, Lucky. Because I've always delighted to talk to each of you whenever you've got something to promote. But even beyond that,
You're a great teacher, Joe. You are a really, really great teacher. Yeah. You go out and you help bring all this information. You ask poignant, wonderful questions. You're very well researched. This conversation wouldn't be possible without you as well. You're also, you're an amazing teacher.
Thank you so much. And there'll be another book next spring?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The Flood.
Maybe called The Flood.
It hit me the other day. Floodwaters.
Floodwaters. Yeah, good one. Yeah. And it's at a time of global warming when, it's very possible that this can happen again.
Exactly. Yeah. Thank you so much for coming in to do this. It's a pleasure to meet Lucky for the first time. And Roy, it's always good to see you and to talk to you.
Yeah, our pleasure too. Thanks, Joe, for
having
us.
Thank you, Joe.
You're very welcome. RoyHenryVickers.com, memories2memoirs.ca, those are their websites. The book is called Orca Chief. It's from Harbor Publishing. Do pick it up. It's just a lovely book to have. It's an important story. It's a necessary story. In these times that we live in, we could use a good look at where we are in this world. And
the art's really nice, too.
Isn't it? Yeah. It's
a narrated art book.
It's beautiful to have, and I've had it at the coffee table upstairs, and people have stopped to look at it, so it's done that job already. Roy Henry Vickers and Lucky Bud join me in studio here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plata.